Hello, everyone. Dan Dillman here, bringing you a little of this, a little of that. We usually end our program with the song and Willie Nelson singing On the Road Again. I thought it was appropriate for the next several programs to take you on a short road trip. And we'll do today's at the beginning of the program. We're going on Route 66, the Mother Road, America's highway, the main street of America, the Will Rogers Highway. Route 66 goes by many names, but there's one thing everyone can agree on. Historic Route 66 is the quintessential American experience. It speaks to westward migration during the Depression, a road of hopes and dreams and opportunities. Route 66 also represents the entrepreneurial spirit of America, from kitsch to classics. These only here spots are worth the trip in themselves. A few favorite roadside pit stops are: follow the 1960s green and yellow neon sign to Whalen's Cuckoo Burger drive-thru for towers of sweet soft serve, crisp fried pickle, and sizzling burgers in Miami, Oklahoma. Hunker down for a nostalgic stay at the Blue Swallow Motel, circa 1940. And this is in Tucumcari, New Mexico. And don't miss the photo ops at the world's largest ketchup bottle in Collinsville, Illinois. Or the graffitied monoliths at the Cadillac Ranch in Amarillo, Texas. Not really a ranch as such, but it's a group of old Cadillacs head first into the ground. As with most road trips, Route 66 is more about the journey than the destination. As you roll along from Chicago to Santa Monica, California, it's not the road and it's not the attractions, it's the people that make this such an interesting trip. A person who has traveled Route 66 more than 200 times since 1949 says, "The people are from all walks of life, from every country in the world. It's really a smorgasbord of cultures and languages. If you travel Route 66 and don't immerse yourself with the people, you're missing the key to the whole experience. You're more than likely to come away from any trip on Route 66 with a whole bunch of new friends. This would be a fitting souvenir from America's highway." And there you have it, the first of our road trips as we go on the road for several programs. Sometimes we'll begin with a road trip. Sometimes it'll be in the middle of the program, sometimes at the end. But you're going to get 5 or 6 road trips, highly recommended for the experience, the sights, and the sounds, and above all, the people. Are you ready for UFOs? Perhaps the unexplained flying objects spotted by pilots, or alien spacecraft that traveled at least 25 trillion miles to spy on us here on Earth. And maybe they aren't. Scientists have a good reason to doubt it. But let's review the UFO Renaissance for those of you who have been paying attention to other purely terrestrial stuff, like the pandemic. On June 25th, the U.S. National Intelligence Community released a long-awaited report on UFOs. The report by the Unidentified Aerial Phenomena Task Force, or UAP, which is the Pentagon's rebranding of UFOs, followed a series of articles in recent years about videos taken by Navy pilots that showed mysterious objects, some of which appeared to be moving at astonishing speeds and with motion unlike any known terrestrial aircraft. The U.S. intelligence investigation looked at 144 reports involving UAPs. It solved only one of them. With the exception of the one instance where we determined with high confidence that the reported UAP was airborne flutter, specifically a deflating balloon, we currently lack sufficient information in our data set to attribute incidents to specific explanations, the report said. Instead, it offered five distinct categories of explanations: airborne clutter, natural atmospheric phenomena, U.S. government or industry development programs, foreign adversary systems, and a catch-all spin labeled other. And despite the inconclusive nature of the report, it was greeted as something of a triumph by people who are active in UFO research. What UFO proponents have long wanted is for the government, the media, and the scientific establishment to take the subject seriously. The intelligence report does that. It says that some of the reports appear to involve real objects because they were observed by multiple instruments or witnesses. There's something there. It's not imaginary. So, yeah, unidentifying flying objects do exist. But we're not sure yet just exactly what they are. So keep on making up those stories about the little people coming trillions of miles just to get a look at us. Probably not so, but there's always a few skeptics. Maybe so. Are you ready for some tacos? Some really great tacos. tacos. Well, this next item is about Brownsville, Texas, on the Rio Grande. Brownsville has its troubles, but it's also starting to draw attention for its thriving collection of distinctive taquerias. Not far from the Rio Grande, this state's border with Mexico, a tall barrier of thick steel slats rises over an open field. As you drive northwest along Southmost Boulevard, the terrain remains mostly vacant, dotted sparingly with houses. And then, suddenly, the air starts to smell of smoke and cumin. The buildings ahead are awash in bright yellows and reds, with signs advertising barbacoa and flautas. The boulevard comes a string of restaurants, one on practically every block for the next few miles. Border towns have long labored under bad reputations, which have only worsened in recent years. But those labels overlook Brownsville's successes, including one of the city's biggest points of pride, its tacos. Along Southmost, the name of both the street and the neighborhood, you'll find some of the best tacos in America, both in variety and quality. This stretch of road has played host to many taco purveyors since the area was developed after World War II, and the taco eating public has grown more discerning. The collection has been winnowed down to a superlative 20 or so restaurants and stands selling really good Mexican food. Some of the greatest and most important taco places in the country are in Brownsville. This, according to the editor of the Texas Monthly magazine and the author of a forthcoming book entitled American Tacos, A History and Guide. His name is Jose Relat. While there are many suburb places to eat tacos along the border, Brownsville is remarkable for both the number of its taco vendors and their excellence. It is just one hot spot, but it really is a bright hot spot. In fact, the James Beard Foundation endorsed that view by naming the Brownsville restaurant Vera's Backyard Barbecue one of six recipients of its 2020 America's Classics Award. These were given to locally owned restaurants that have timeless appeal and are beloved regionally for quality food that reflects the character of its community. Moreover, the foundation singled out Vera's specialty, barbacoa. Brownsville is a 4-hour drive from San Antonio, which is the closest major Texas city. But the chance to savor this disappearing border town delicacy really does merit a pilgrimage Vera's barbacoa is just the start. At Sylvia's, a diner stuffed with Dallas Cowboys paraphernalia, the large flour tortilla encasing the machacado con huevo a la Mexicana, which pairs salty dried beef with fluffy eggs, is buttery and flaky, as if a French pastry had met a burrata. Easy-to-go tacos, a tiny mirror-lined box of a restaurant, is known for its exceptional flautas. These are tiny tacos rolled up with beef or chicken. They're fried and can be quickly polished off by the dozen. Kind of like sliders at the White Castle, huh? At Las Siete Salsas, at the Seven Salsas, servers push the quecas. This is a messy, rib-sticking pile of corn tortillas, refried beans, strips of beef, and queso fresco. Tacos El Compadres, crispy chicken and potato-filled tacos dorados, are showered in grated queso fresco and shredded lettuce, and seated atop a shallow pool of peppery salsa roja, red hot salsa. Business is brisk at most of these establishments, each of which seems to have its own loyal following. Though there are some customers from elsewhere in Texas or even beyond. Most are Brownsville residents, drawn simply by word of mouth. That must be so because the website of the Brownsville Convention and Visitors Bureau has no listing of places to eat. I should inject here that I discovered that when I did research along the border and spent many long days in Brownsville back in the 1960s. You asked people where to eat because you couldn't find it written down anywhere. Well, still there is considerable hardship in Brownsville. Over 30% of its 183,000 people live in poverty. But there's also signs of growth. Annual retail sales now total $2 billion. The city reported that in 2019. While the unemployment rate has fallen to just over 5% from about double that some years before. And then the latest of the outsiders to introduce industry here was SpaceX, a private aerospace manufacturer founded by Elon Musk, who broke ground on the world's first commercial orbital rocket launch site here in 2014. And that brought an influx of capital and of jobs. The southmost area, affectionately known as La Southmost, has become a lively center with schools, grocers, and banks. It's frequented mainly by the city's robust population of Mexican immigrants, many of whom arrived as part of the Bracero program back in the 60s. This was a collaboration between the United States and Mexico that brought millions of guest workers to America from the early 1940s to the mid-1960s. The taco restaurants that opened here in the 1950s and afterward served as models for what would become the modern American taqueria. What keeps all of these places busy is that each has a distinctive style. Vera's, for example, which opened in 1955, is the only restaurant in Texas with a permit to cook meat underground, according to a city health department spokesman. Vera has been making barbacoa there since 12 years of age. Armando Vera, I should say, when Armando's parents ran the place. He now smokes cow heads in a pit behind the restaurant for several hours until the meat is charred, soft, and shreddable. And then it's served with corn tortillas, onions, cilantro, and several kinds of salsa. And so this is today's food segment, I guess you would say. So keep in mind, the key to a good taco is in the details. Has the meat been well cleaned? Are the tortillas homemade? Are high quality dried beans used? Is attention paid to the salsa? And at a place called Marcello's, another standout is the chicharrones verdes, a sinewy pork skin bathed in tomatillos, green chiles, and cilantro, and then served inside plush corn tortillas. Well, I hope you're all hungry now for a taste of Mexican food. Until next time, I'll be back with some more food stories. Where will they be from? Here's some weather information you might find interesting. Chicago's wettest and driest Septembers are all hurricane related. September, with a normal precipitation of a little over 3 inches, typically has a middle-of-the-road ranking as Chicago's seventh wettest month. Since 1871, the month has hosted huge precipitation extremes, ranging from a hundredth of an inch in 1979, that was the all-time driest month in Chicago, to over 14 inches in 1961. And ironically, hurricanes played a major role in the precipitation totals for both the city's wettest and driest Septembers. The soggy Septembers in September 1961, there were hurricanes. The remnants of Hurricane Carla produced more than 5 inches of rain. And then later that month, there were waves of thunderstorms, both of which had caused considerable flooding. But in 1979, few took notice when 13 minutes of rain fell on the 1st of September and produced a scant 1/100th of an inch, but the shower was the only measurable rain to fall in Chicago that month. And it was because of the anchoring in place of high pressure systems and the back end of low pressure systems. So more about that perhaps at a later time. But I thought it was interesting to pass along that the driest and wettest Septembers were all hurricane related. And now, just a few words about what lies ahead next week. We're going to have another road trip. We may go to a Florida beach. We may go down the Mississippi. Maybe we'll even visit Arches National Park, but you can bet that we'll visit New England in Massachusetts as one of our road trips. And then just a few comments about global progress of late. And that is that in this country of Paraguay, the resurgence of yerba mate, herbal tea, is helping to bring economic independence to small-scale farmers. And in the United States, Newark, New Jersey, has replaced nearly all city water pipes made of lead. Quite a great accomplishment, I think. And in Africa, the country of Tanzania, women in Zanzibar are learning to farm natural sponges. So, y'all come back now, please. Next time, you all take care, and we'll be here to entertain, inform you, and maybe make you smile. Take us out, Willie.